My family, I'm Cheryl, and I'm truly, truly, truly a grateful recovering addict. And I'm very nervous. But this process that I'm in has shown me one day at a time why I'm here. And it's not always about me. I recognize today that God saved my life for you. And by any means necessary, when it comes to me through a spirit and a feeling that it was time for me to do something for God, I show up. No matter how nervous I am, no matter how many times the voices tell me I ain't got nothing to share about, I show up anyway. Because I trust in the power that got me here, that when I show up and when I do things like listen as I say the serenity prayer, allow your voices to overpower the voices that used to tell me the negative things while saying the serenity prayer, I'm able to allow God in and remove me out the way. So I'm going to say it with some honesty, because that's the only way I can survive in this program. And I'm going to tell y'all, I ain't signed up for none of this. I ain't signed up for no change. I ain't signed up for no blessings. Because I was okay with the one blessing that meant the world to me, that I had a turn that came. That was the one thing that I signed up for. I was that addict that always told my mother, because I had a nosy mother, I have a concerned mother, and I have a loving and caring mother that never took her eyes off of me. Even if I lived East Baltimore and she lived West Baltimore, she always had a set of eyes on me. She signed me up. And when I say she signed me up, she literally signed me up. When I was out there, I'm going to tell you, my mother was my geek. And I understand today why. Because God was using my mother to bring me some help. When I say my mother literally signed me up, my mother did some stuff behind my back that I didn't approve of. One, she didn't ask me. Two, she lied. And three, she stood right there by my side. My mother signed me up. She always sat and watched TV and think about how bad she wanted to help her daughter. And so she signed me up and she called the TV show. She called the Judge Hatch show. And she shared with me afterwards how she did it. She said the topic came through and God opened her up. And he said, now it's your turn. And she called that show. The topic was, if you had a loved one that needed some help and was on drugs, call. And she thought about me. And my mother called. And she had already told these people what I needed. Because, see, my mother listened. When I told her, I said, Ma, if I ever get a chance to leave Baltimore, I'm going to stop getting high. By the time that information about the Judge had to show got to me, she had implemented my sister. And I remember my sister coming over to the house I was staying. Because, see, let me first tell y'all, The end result wasn't the end result. It was just the beginning. Because I had many of end results. I first thought it was after my children are removed from my custody, I'm going to stop getting high. I got high more. Because there was freedom. I didn't have to care about where they were anymore. I didn't have to feed them. And I didn't have to spend my money on them anymore. I'm not going to tell y'all that I lost custody. Because, see, once I entered into recovery, I realized that there was going to be a time where I had to recognize my part. And so I no longer say my children was retaken from me. I gave my children up through my own decisions and my own actions. And that was how I had to accept that I was going to continue to get high with or without them. When they were removed, I continued to get high. They were out of my custody for 5 years. And I want to tell y'all that I had some crying nights. But I got to be honest and tell y'all that, see, when I had my kids in my custody, I used my kids. And if there's anybody in here that's sitting back trying to figure out whether I was that girl you seen down in the harbor begging for money, if I ever asked you for something and I told y'all my 10-year lie, it's me. That was my result. Those were my end results. When my sister came to the house that I was now living in a one-bedroom townhouse with 5 pit bulls and 2 men. One bedroom. I slept in the kitchen at the table, my behind in one chair and my feet propped up on the other. I had no business with these men, no interactions in no sexual kind of way, because I was that type of woman. I became this independent dope, this independent crackhead. I was a crackhead when that song was out, "Your Mama's on Crack Rock." And they used to sing that to my children. Because, see, I was buying my stuff from the people that was in the neighborhood. I wasn't that type where I got some good dope, I got some good crack. Girl, let's go over so-and-so and so-and-so. I ain't had time for all that. I wanted whatever was near because I didn't trust nobody. But I remember when my sister brought this note, this number to my house, to the house that I was living at. And she said, "Mommy said, call this number." And I said, "Okay, I'll call it." But I ain't call it till the next day. And I can tell that talking to these people that my mother had already given them the information. All they wanted from me was the okay. And I said, "Okay." And they were ready to come get me the next day. But I had to get one more. And I'm here to tell you that by then I had gotten put out of the house that I was staying at. And that one more, when that hit, that I was getting ready to go somewhere, and it was out of Baltimore. And I was getting ready to go somewhere, and this was going to be my last time getting high. I say, "Well, I'm going to do one more thing." And I climbed through these people window that put me out their house. Climbed through the kitchen window. Wasn't worried about the dogs because I had already had a relationship with them. They had already knew who I was and I knew who they were. So it made it easy for me to dip in. And I sniffed out the drugs. This dude had hit his crack. It was around Christmas time when you already started your Christmas shopping. And he had hit this crack in a pair of boxing gloves that were in the box as if that the box was never open. And I found it. And I took his stuff and I took it somewhere so I could make a trade. Because I ain't mentioned I was also a heroin addict. I couldn't do one without the other. I had a dual habit. But one came first. You know, one got me motivated and one helped me make decisions. And that's how it affected me. And you couldn't tell me that at that time I wasn't making healthy decisions because I was scorned. You know, whenever I set my mind to go out and get something, no matter how much money I said I was going to make, I always had a lie lined up. And I'm telling you, if I told it the way I tell it, with a little bit of tears, a little bit of emotions, you won't believe it. And I told the same lie for 10 years. And to me, it wasn't an... You know how you tell a lie, but not a lie? It was some truth to it. But I put some stuff in it to make it work. You know, and I'll never forget the lie. The lie was that I was trying to get my children to a battered women shelter called the House of Ruth, located up on Argonne Drive. I had no idea where Argonne Drive was. And all I'm trying to do is get some cab fare. Now, granted, I've had people put me in a cab and paid the cab driver. And I went on and I went over there, but I worked my way back downtown, you know. But moving forward, you know, when my sister brought me this note and I called and I made that decision over the phone that it was going to be okay and I go ahead and go. And I climbed through the window, I got the crack, and I made the trade. And the next day, they were going to come pick me up in a limousine. I lived in the projects, in the Troll Projects. And I'm going to tell you. It had gotten so bad. My addiction had gotten so bad that it woke up my low self-esteem. See, this is an inside-out job, but I'm one of them honest addicts that I'm going to stand here and tell y'all I had to work from the outside first. I had to work from the outside because, see, as long as I felt good about how I looked, something else was going to change. Because, see, I grew up in this dark, complected skin that I never liked. I never liked being dark-skinned because, you know, when you growing up and back then when I was growing up and you get in a fight, you get in a fuss and argument, you know, the first thing come out your mouth was black this, dark this, you blacker than tar, you know. So I ain't like being dark-skinned. But see, back then I didn't know how to verbalize that to my loved ones. Because, see, they were the ones that was doing it. And people learned from them. So I became, because I had these two light-skinned sisters lighter than me, I created this mission in my mind that whatever I did, it was going to be a competition with me and them two light-skinned sisters. I had to dance the best. I had to walk the best. Anything I had to do, I had to put it in a competition so that I can be successful with it. And that's how I grew up. And I grew into this low self-esteem in a way where it affected me. And I didn't like light-skinned people when I first came around here. I didn't like light-skinned people, not because you all weren't likable, but because I hadn't gotten to where I needed to be to like myself. And I started talking about it. But when I went on the Judge Hatcher show looking a hot to five mess, I've always been aggressive in my demeanor and in my actions. And they did this thing where they sent me to jail in Fulton County. They put me on meth. I always told my mother I wasn't going to get on no meth. But they set up this methadone thing, the Judge Hatchet, you know, where I was going to be all right if I went. So I said, okay, I'll go. So they flew me to Atlanta, Georgia, ill as all outdoors, had to stay in a room by myself. And you already know that I thought about some things because, see, wherever I went, I carried me. And I carried my skills, too. And so I wasn't going to lay up in there too long. Ill. And I thought about being introduced to the streets of Atlanta, Georgia. You know, I just wanted to bag enough to get $10. But then once I got the $10, what was I going to do with it? So through God's grace and His mercy, He allowed me to sit still in the midst because He had a plan that I knew nothing about. And He opened that clinic. And I got in that clinic and I watched everybody in and out getting their juice. And I wanted mine so bad. And I fell short. And I acted out to a point where they didn't want to medicate me. So I was in trouble now because they had to call the Judge Hatcher show. And let them know that I was a little lunatic and they didn't want to deal with me. So they had to work some other stuff out and I was able to get medicated but then go to jail. So I'm in Atlanta, Georgia. They walked me and put this stuff on. Now I'm starting to feel some stuff from the inside. I'm talking about fear. Because I felt me from the inside entering into a place that I had no idea about, but it felt good, but I was scared. I'm talking about that feeling of being in tune and in touch with my turn. Because see, I already knew, that if I took that medication and it said that I was going to feel good, because I wasn't not one that liked to take pills. I didn't believe in that stuff. I believe in the direct stuff, you know, because I did this before, you know. But I'm here to tell y'all that one day at a time, after that Judge Hatcher show, and I remember looking at my mother on that show on national TV. They lied to me. They told me. They came and picked me up from their hotel room. And they told me I was going to a 6-month detox place. And I ended up on TV. With my mother standing there. She pulled out this little picture of me with this big head when I was this little girl. And she said, Cheryl, I want my daughter back. Yeah.